Alaska's permafrost has been melting since 1982, but it's only been in recent years that we've seen pictures of the damage that has resulted in villages there. On today's second underreported segment, Vladimir Romanovsky, professor of geophysics at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, explains why the permafrost is melting and how it's affecting Alaska, and I'm very pleased to welcome him to our show today. Hello.
Hello. Hi.
Before we begin, what is permafrost?
Well, permafrost is frozen ground, and it's in the past it was referred as a permanent frozen ground. So now we can say it's permanent; it's perennially frozen ground. By definition, it's just any earth material, subsurface material, which is at or below 0 degrees Celsius for two consecutive years. It is permafrost.
And so how much of Alaska is covered in permafrost?
Well, about 80% of Alaskan territory is affected by permafrost.
And how thick is it typically?
Well, it's, of course, changing from very shallow in the southern part, just a few meters, up to 650 meters known thickness of permafrost in Prudhoe Bay. It's about 200 feet. I mean, I'm sorry, 2,000 feet.
Oh, that's very deep. Is it all vulnerable to melting?
Well, of course, not all this cold and thick permafrost is. However, the upper part of permafrost is vulnerable, no matter if it's cold or warm. The upper part could be affected with by warming.
The upper part is called the active part.
Well, the active layer is the part which is thawing and freezing every year. It's not part of permafrost, but it's a very important part of the environment because all plants take grown and use this area for their nutrients and water in the summer. This part is generally getting thicker with warming of permafrost.
It's getting thicker because it's drawing from the permafrost beneath it?
Well, it's getting thicker because summer is getting warmer, and the summer thaw is penetrates deeper and deeper every summer. And cold permafrost, it still freezes every winter. But in southern regions, sometimes it will not freeze completely during the winter, and the layer which is not frozen at all during whole period for whole year could actually appear there, and that's a major threshold when permafrost starts to degrade.
Between 1949 and 2007, the average temperature in Alaska has risen 3.4 degrees Fahrenheit and an average of 6.3 degrees in the wintertime. Is that why the state's permafrost now melts in the summer and then refreezes in the winter at this rate?
That's right. The changes in air temperature is the major driver of changes in permafrost. Of course, there are some other ones, like, for example, snow cover. Snow is very important because it protects permafrost snow is important because it's warm up permafrost in the winter. And if you have more snow, permafrost is getting warmer. If we have less snow, actually permafrost can survive with warmer air temperatures. And what we see in Alaska right now, that with warmer air temperature, snow is we have a little bit less of snow. So that's kind of delay the warming of permafrost compared to warming of air temperature. However, eventually, permafrost, this warming signal from air temperature penetrates into permafrost, and permafrost warming and thawing deeper and deeper, and eventually start to degrade in some areas in Alaska.
What does that do to the ground? Does it unsettle the ground? Would it damage infrastructure on it, like roads and railroads?
That's right, because the most important characteristic of permafrost is ice, of course, in it, and in the area with a significant amount of ice in it, thawing permafrost will melt this ice. Ice will turn into water, run away, and surface subsides. In some places, this subsidence could be very significant, up to several feet. And of course, with this subsidence, everything what we have on the top, or infrastructure, any kind of infrastructure or any kind of ecosystem, it is affected by this subsidence. And what we see now, the roads are much more vulnerable now. And for example, in the Fairbanks area, the Department of Transportation put lots of efforts, very heroic efforts, to keep our roads in a good shape. But it's getting more and more difficult every year.
Well, I was wondering about the Alaskan government's response, because yesterday Sarah Palin had an op-ed piece in the Washington Post that questioned the severity of climate change.
Well, of course, on the general trend of warming, we see some warmer, relatively cold periods. It's normal. It's natural variability, and right now we are on this semi-decadal period of actually stabilizing temperatures in interior Alaska, and even a little bit of cooling, and we see it in permafrost temperatures as well. But this is just temporary, and it doesn't mean that this global warming ended up and it will be cooling. So that's the difficult part of predictions, because this variability, natural variability, is imposed on a longer-term warming trend. And right now, there's stabilization, but it doesn't mean that everything is okay and we resolve all our problems.
My guest is Vladimir Romanovsky, professor of geophysics at the University of Alaska at Fairbanks. We're talking about Alaska's melting permafrost in our second underreported segment today. Do we know how long it took to form the permafrost? How far back does this go in Earth's history?
Well, it's permafrost in Alaska specifically is very old. That's at least 2 million years ago, some permafrost already formed in Alaska. Most of icy permafrost near to the surface was formed during the last glacial period, so about between 80 and 20,000 years ago. However, permafrost can form any time. For example, in a cold climate, under lakes, there is no permafrost very often. So if lake drains, new permafrost will form. So the age of permafrost, it's all spectrum from just several years to several million years.
But there's methane forming in it, isn't there?
That's right. There is some methane already as a methane sequestered in permafrost, but also permafrost holds a very substantial amount of carbon in form of dead roots and stems and grasses. So this organic material is frozen now and is out of carbon cycle. So it is sequestered in this way, and it will be in this way as far as permafrost is stable. However, if permafrost is thawing, then this material will be exposed to this bacteria activities and will be involved again in carbon cycle and production of methane or carbon dioxide, depending on conditions, will be a significant part of this process. And this carbon dioxide and methane could reach atmosphere, increasing the concentration of greenhouse gases.
Does deforestation contribute to the erosion of the permafrost?
In Alaska, we don't have not too much artificial deforestation in the permafrost areas. Well, there is some cutting, of course, but it's not that common. Much more actually dangerous is forest fires. Forest fires is a typical situation in summer in Alaska, and forest fires definitely impact permafrost very significantly, because they destroy this protective organic layer above the permafrost, and without this protection, permafrost starts to thaw, and that is what we are experiencing in interior Alaska right now.
Well, scientists have estimated that the Arctic will be ice-free within a decade. What's the forecast for Alaska's permafrost? Will it disappear before the ice caps?
No. Actually, permafrost is much more inertial system, more inertial component of the Arctic system compared to sea ice. It takes much, much longer time. Well, for complete disappearance, even with all this warming, projected warming, will happen not sooner than many hundreds of years in the future, or maybe even several thousands of years, maybe even longer. However, the point is that the most of this organic material and most of ice is in the upper part of permafrost, upper, say, few tens of meters. This warming and thawing of permafrost from the top will affect these layers of ice and carbon almost immediately. So that's the point, that we don't need to wait when all permafrost disappeared. Even the beginning of thawing will produce some impacts on infrastructure, ecosystem, and potentially carbon cycle that will be not pleasant.
A study in 2004 found that 184 out of Alaska's 213 native villages have been grappling with floods and erosion. Should I assume that's all the result of this melting permafrost?
Well, a part of it, not all of it. The erosion, coastal erosion, is the product of increase of the wave effects and more open water, more stronger waves. Also, it could be affected by amplification of the the precipitation as well. But permafrost thaw is part of it, part of the story, because when permafrost is thawing in the coastal area, the coasts are much more vulnerable to effect of water. And even if it's a river coast or ocean coast, it doesn't matter. So warming permafrost and thawing permafrost definitely add to the vulnerability of the coasts.
And a couple
of
years ago, they were
much more extensive, yeah.
In 2007, there were dramatic photographs of houses in remote Alaskan villages falling into the sea. Those houses were in the village of Shishmaref, where they spent $10 million in seawall. So I guess they're not really all that effective. Is there anything effective? Earlier this week, a piece in the Wall Street Journal described the use of thermosiphons. How do they help the ground around them stay frozen?
Yeah, thermal siphons is an engineering solution for keep permafrost in a more stable state. It's pretty simple solution, but it's not cheap. It's expensive, so thermal siphons can stabilize and decrease temperature around them and some surrounding of these piles, and they can work for some particular structures, but it's practically impossible to use them for any linear structures like roads. Alaska pipeline, oil pipeline, also use this and use it very, very efficiently. So far they work very good both in cold and warm permafrost. But again, it's very, very expensive solution. So there are engineering solutions that are available, but with a more vulnerable permafrost, these solutions will be more and more expensive.
Thank you so much for talking with us, Vladimir Romanovsky, professor of geophysics at the University of Alaska at Fairbanks.
Thank you very much. We've been talking about
Alaska's melting permafrost on Underreported. On tomorrow's show, Manhattan Borough President Scott Stringer and NYU nutrition professor Marion Nessel discuss the upcoming Food and Climate Summit here in New York. And then we'll take a look at Woofing, a program that allows people to experience organic farming around the world. Plus, I Know How to Cook has been one of the most popular cookbooks in France since 1932. We'll speak with its first English translator. And when we're done talking about all that food, our latest Please Explain is all about digestion. The Leonard Lopate Show is produced by Blake Neshek, Stephen Valentino, and Julia Corcoran. Melissa Egan is the executive producer, and we had help today from Josh Bell and Barbara Kahn. Debbie Fountain was at the audio controls. I'm Leonard Lopate, your host. Thanks for listening. We will see you tomorrow.